Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sam Pizzicati, who's a veteran Labor journalist and associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and an editor at the online newsletter Too Much. His latest book is The Rich Don't Always Win, The Forgotten Triumph of a Plutocracy That Created the American Middle Class. And he has an article at the Washington Spectator, Plutocrats Ponder in the Alps. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sam Pizzicati.
Thank you, Ian.
And I'd like to talk to you about your article on the Davos meeting in the Swiss Alps that's just finished, where the plutocrats sit around in hot tubs, sipping champagne, wringing their hands over the fate of the world. But the president is expected to talk about income disparity in his upcoming State of the Union address. What's your sense of how far he's going to take the argument?
Well, all signs are that we're getting from our advanced press reports, all signs are that he's not going to take it very far. I think there's a great deal of confusion now in the public mind about inequality. Various politicians are doing their best to water down a discussion about inequality into a discussion about opportunity, and I fear the president is going to play into that confusion tonight.
So opportunity is a slogan, but not a reality.
That's right. And when politicians normally talk about opportunity, many times they're talking about opportunity in a blame the victim sort of way. In other words, people don't have the skills to succeed, and that's why we have a problem with inequality. Well, of course, that's not the case at all. We have a problem with inequality because our 1%, actually our top 0.1%, have rigged the rules in America their way, and essentially have placed a big squeeze on average American workers.
But the president will be speaking to a Republican House and a Democratic Senate. And there's no question that the Republicans have consistently gone to the mat for millionaires and billionaires, particularly on preserving tax cuts. They've threatened to shut down the entire government and tank the economy, all in the name of the terrible sky is falling deficits. But the real agenda is to get tax breaks for the rich. It's been so obvious, and they really do fight the good fight on behalf of the rich. So is it time for Obama to call them out? He hasn't exactly given Wall Street a hard time, but he's certainly not as supine as the House is.
Certainly not. But President Obama, unfortunately, has a problem in his own party, because we have influential figures like Chuck Schumer, the senior senator from New York State, who has been talking about essentially not demonizing the rich and not talking about taxing the wealthy. And talk like this undercuts the president, undercuts his efforts to really make this country a much more equal place.
Well, a plutocrat in the Silicon Valley recently wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal suggesting that the 1% like him were being misunderstood and they were being scapegoated like the Nazis scapegoated the Jew. And he was talking that Kristallnacht is just around the corner for the billionaires. Where does that sort of paranoid fantasy come from?
Well, that you're referring to the venture capitalist from Silicon Valley, Tom Perkins, and he has certainly stirred up a firestorm with his comment that talked about the demonization of the 1% in the same way that he said that Jews were demonized in Nazi Germany during the time of Kristallnacht. Of course, this is outrageous. When we talk about top 1%, that's not a demonization. That's a description of reality, a description of the top-heavy distribution of wealth and income that we have in the United States today. And for figures like Tom Perkins, this very wealthy billionaire venture capitalists, they see the world in a very different way. They see the world as rewarding people for their creativity and their hard work, and that's how they justify their grandstanding in the world. But I think comments like this by Tom Perkins reveal just how out of touch the super rich are. They're a group of people surrounded by people like them, and they live in a totally luxurious bubble.
Again, I'm speaking with Sam Pizzicato, who's a veteran labor journalist, an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, and an editor at the online newsletter Too Much. His latest book is The Rich Don't Always Win, The Forgotten Triumph Over Plutocracy That Created the American Middle Class. And he has an article at the Washington Spectator, Plutocrats Ponder in the Alps. But the president is delivering his State of the Union only a few days after Oxfam came up with their study Working for the Few, which found that the world's richest 85 people, that's just 85 people on this planet, have the combined wealth equal to that of the bottom half of the world's population of 3.5 billion people. What more evidence does the president want?
That's right. There's a very powerful Oxfam report that came out just before the annual Davos retreat of the world's ultra-rich and powerful. There are a number of incredibly dramatic stats in that report, including a figure on the amount of cash that the wealthy now have stashed in offshore tax havens. Oxfam researchers estimate that stash at $18.5 trillion. In other words, this is almost $19 trillion that every year is generating income that essentially goes tax-free.
Well, isn't our annual GDP $15
trillion? That's right. So that just gives you a sense of the immense size of this stash of cash now in offshore tax havens.
Well, also, a lot of big American corporations just park their profits offshore and don't pay taxes.
There are all sorts of very esoteric tax loopholes that companies like Amazon and Google and Apple use to hide and park their profits. I would like to see the president tonight in the State of the Union address go after these loopholes, no holds barred. But unfortunately, I don't expect that to happen.
So tell me, Sam Pizzicato, about your book, The Rich Don't Always Win, The Forgotten Triumph Over Plutocracy That Created the American Middle Class. Given that the president is supposed to address this issue, which I think is out there in the political zeitgeist, I think people feel it, they know it, and it's probably a good opportunity for a teachable moment. So what can you teach Obama from the book that you wrote?
Well, I think what the rich don't always win, what this new book can teach is a very positive lesson. And that is, just over a century ago in the early 1900s in the United States, we faced a rich and powerful, a plutocracy that was even more rich and powerful than our top 1% is today. Yet over the span of the next half century, we trimmed that super rich down to democratic size. The United States in the middle of the 20th century was a much, much more equal place than the United States in the early 1900s. We went from an America that was two-thirds poor to an America that was two-thirds middle class. We went from a top 1% that was annually getting almost a quarter of the nation's income to a top 1% that was getting less than 8% of the nation's annual income. So we made a real difference over the first half of the 20th century. And if we made that difference back then, why can't we do that again? Why can't we launch another offensive against inequality that'll make this country safe for average working people?
Well, Sam Pizzicato, arguably we were a social democracy that had a vibrant middle class from 1947 to 1977. And with the coming of Ronald Reagan, all of those gains that you just mentioned were rolled back. And it took a while from the beginning of the century with McKinley, followed, of course, by the accidental presidency of Teddy Roosevelt and the Depression, etc., to bring about equity in the United States. But one of the things I find fascinating about the period that you just referred to, the original Gilded Age of McKinley, during that great political contest between Williams Jennings Bryan and the plutocrat McKinley, the political left, there was such a thing as a religious left back in those days, where urban and rural poor that were religious and evangelical voted for their class interests. They didn't vote against their class interests like the modern-day televangelists encourage their followers in the red states to do.
Well, that's true. There's a very strong progressive religious strain in Protestant circles. There was a movement that was called the Social Gospel movement that was very strong. In Catholic circles, you had Father John Ryan from Minnesota, who was originally from Minnesota, who was a strong leader and a strong advocate of a more equal distribution of income and wealth in the United States. So you had powerful religious movements going on at those towns at that time, which supplemented the political efforts and created a cultural environment of struggle against inequality.
Well, obviously, the canard that's been floated every time anybody talks about income disparity and wealth disparity is, you know, the specter of class war is raised. And to my mind, it's an absurdity. I mean, if there's a class war, then we're all POWs. We've lost. I mean, if 85 people control half of the world's wealth, I'd say the war's over, wouldn't you?
Well, Warren Buffett, the billionaire in investor, has a quip that has become rather famous. He says, we're having a class war. We've had a class war in this country, and my side won. And I think that's what you're getting at. And you can look at the situation and certainly say that's the case. But class wars are never over. And our class, the class of average people, class of working people in the United States, we're certainly down at this point. We've been hammered hard over the past 30 to 40 years, but we can come back. And just as the people came before us came back against America's original plutocracy.
Well, in your article in the Washington Spectator, Sam Pizzicati, "Plutocrats Ponder in the Alps," you talk about this idea that the world's wealthiest people talk about these issues, but obviously not in a way that we are discussing them. What's your understanding, though, about Obama in this context? Because I know, for example, that Bill Clinton seemed to be really comfortable with plutocrats, and he seemed to be able to really charm them and get huge lecture fees. Maybe Obama will do that when he gets out of office, but I'm not entirely convinced that he's that thrilled with them, or maybe I'm wrong.
Well, that's an interesting point, and I can't go into his mind and sort of scope out what his true feelings are. What we do know from historical figures like Franklin Roosevelt, for instance, Franklin Roosevelt was born rich and circulated among rich people all his life, and what that left Franklin Roosevelt with was an understanding that rich people are no smarter or dumber than anybody else. He was distinctly unimpressed by the rich. Sometimes people not born into wealth can be terribly impressed by wealth and intimidated by it. FDR certainly wasn't. I don't know where President Obama is on that score.
Well, we do know that FDR took the fight to them, didn't he? I mean, they were scurrilous and scandalous, not unlike the way the Republicans have been about Obama, where they've tried to delegitimize him by simply suggesting that he's not even an American citizen. He wasn't even born here. Therefore, you don't have to deal with him. And you had one Republican Congressman, Jeff Sessions from Texas, saying, to Obama's face, I can't stand to look at you. So they've taken the fight to Obama. But unlike FDR, who said, I welcome their hatred, Obama has not. Do you think something will change tonight?
No. I don't expect to see any big change tonight. Obama's getting pressured by many of his advisors, like Senator Chuck Schumer from New York, to lay off the inequality talk, to lay off the talk about combating the over-influence of the 1% in American society. So we'll see what course he chooses.
Well, but, you know, we all know that it is a kabuki theater that's going on in Washington, that both parties are owned by the same moneyed interests. I mean, that's what's really going on here, isn't it?
That's right. But there is a very strong tension within the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party gets its votes from one group of people and gets its money from another. It gets its money from deep pockets in the United States, just as the Republican Party does. So there is this inherent tension within the Democratic Party, and at different times, different sides of this equation are on the ascendancy. And I think now is a period where things are up for grabs in the party. There's a lot of grassroots pressure on the president now to take on inequality in a serious way, and that pressure needs to increase if we're going to really make a move against inequality.
Well, Sam Pizzicati, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Sam Pizzicati, who's a veteran labor journalist and associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies and an editor at the online newsletter Too Much. His latest book is The Rich Don't Always Win, The Forgotten Triumph Over Plutocracy That Created the American Middle Class. And he has an article at the Washington Spectator, Plutocrats Ponder in the Alps. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about dog whistle politics on the right.